the OTB Podcast Network.
They spoke about your arm not being down beside your side. I mean, this is not Irish dancing.
OTB Sports Radio.
Basketball would have been my main game.
The brand new sports radio station from Off the Ball.
That's my point. Don't play for us if you're a proud Englishman.
Now broadcasting 24 hours a day, live on the Go Loud app, Alexa.
You have a whole new world of possibilities.
Google Home, TuneIn, and offtheball.com/radio.
This is OTB Sports Radio. Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
So over the next few weeks, we'll be digging out the context book to chat to some former rugby players and coaches, looking back on their careers and checking in with what they're up to these days. We'll be playing these out on Off the Ball every Sunday evening. We'll video them as well for those who might want to watch it back online. And we'll also podcast those as well. You can get them in the rugby section on the OTB Podcast Network. And a reminder as well that all of our rugby coverage on Off the Ball is brought to you by Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. Now, this week, I was speaking to the recently retired former Munster and Grenoble hooker, Duncan Casey, who hung up his boots at the end of last season. Duncan, how are you doing? Thanks a million for joining us.
You're very welcome, Neil. Thanks for having me. I'm doing fine. I'm in the same predicament as everyone else, I suppose, in that just trying to keep busy and keep the mind occupied. So thankfully, I'm finishing a master's at the moment in UL, so that's actually keeping me busy enough. So I'll have plenty to keep me occupied over the next few weeks anyway. So I'm certainly not idle by any means, which is a big help at the moment.
Right. So life isn't changing too much for you. You're still just kind of head into the books and studying away, writing away, I imagine.
Exactly, yeah. So the only thing that's changed really is that lectures have moved online, but all of our kind of end of semester assignments would have been on a continuous assessment basis anyway. We didn't have any exams to prep for, so we're kind of fortunate in that sense. I actually live with a lecturer. He's a stats lecturer, and obviously like anything relating to maths or statistics would have a written examination at the end of the semester usually. So I would imagine that's far more of an upheaval for people than kind of trying to come up with things to waffle about like you do in my discipline. So we're a little bit fortunate in that respect, yeah.
And the Masters is in politics as well, isn't it? I know a lot of people who'd follow you on social media would know that you're quite politically spoken. You're very interested in that.
Yeah, or a loudmouth, more accurate way of describing me. But yeah, the Masters is in politics, just general politics. So kind of the bulk of stuff this semester is relating to European politics, which is kind of an area that potentially I would be looking at getting a bit at moving into at some point in the future, if possible, potentially working in something to do with European governance or the EU institutions. So we'll see. So it's been very interesting from that point of view the last few weeks.
So you'd be interested then in the, I suppose, the administration side of politics rather than the actual, we're not going to see you running to be an MEP or a TD anytime soon, are we?
No, that's not part of the plan. Everyone seems to think I had this master plan the whole time while I was playing just to move swiftly into running for office afterwards. But that's never really been part of the plan. I don't envisage that happening anytime soon anyway. So quite happy to be in the background or, as I said, just running my mouth online, probably a bit more than I should.
You strike me as someone, though, who had kind of been planning for life without rugby for a long time. I'd say you kind of, it seemed that when you did announce your retirement, you were kind of ready to hang up the boots and ready to become a non-rugby player and looking forward to the rest of your life. Had you been kind of laying out what you'd be interested in doing over the few years previous?
I had, Neil. I suppose my hand was forced, really, in the sense that, look, it's no secret that I kind of burst onto the scene quite quickly and then burst off the scene kind of just as quickly, really. So I got a couple of bad injuries back to back, and that was a real wake-up call from my point of view. Like I had taken a big leave of absence from my undergraduate degree in UL at that point, and I suppose you just fall into the trap of, like most young professional athletes, thinking that this is all that there is in the world and it's going to last indefinitely and that you don't really need to concern yourself with anything else. But it's only when things are taken out of your hands in a way that only major injuries can do that you start to realize that there's stuff that you need to plan for outside of a rugby pitch or outside of a training center. So I'd had a kind of a couple of poor years, I suppose, to finish my time in Munster. And like, I had already decided to retire at that point. I wasn't planning on moving to France at all, as I've kind of said before. And so I've kind of been in the mentality of planning for life afterwards for quite some time. When people ask me what I'm planning on actually doing, I'm still not entirely sure. Kind of the lead up to last June, when I actually played my last game, people were asking me the same thing, and I was saying, ah, sure, look, I'll take my time. I have to finish my degree and everything else, and I'll get a bit of inspiration at some point. But if you were to ask me the same question today, I can pretty much give you the same answer almost a year later. So I'm still figuring that out. But I suppose I readied myself psychologically for the transition, probably over a longer period of time than most guys would. So I was kind of lucky in that respect. But as I say, it was out of my hands, really. I had no choice but to get myself ready for it.
And obviously you'd mentioned, like, you started planning because you had a couple of years where things really started to get bad for you with injuries and stuff like that. So you were kind of mentally preparing for life after rugby. But I suppose by the time you actually did retire, from what I could see, like, you'd got a decent season at Grenoble without too many injuries or anything like that. And you looked like you were back into rugby fitness, I would say. How long were you deciding whether or not to actually call it a day? Were you humming and hawing maybe about giving it another year, going for another club?
Yeah, to be honest, I decided quite early on in last season, we'll say, that it was going to be my last season. And there were a number of reasons for that. But like, my move to France initially kind of fell into my lap, more or less. I was incredibly lucky to get the chance to go over. And initially that was just a four and a half month contract. And I basically said, look, I'll give it a roll of the dice. If it works out for me, I'll keep on playing. But if it doesn't, I've already prepared myself to stop and just to do something else. And I would have been quite happy with that decision at that point. But obviously I went over, it went really well. I played a big part in the remainder of that season, that kind of final third of the season. And it was just terrific getting that exposure to, like, not just a new team, but a new league, a new style of rugby and everything else, and a new country and culture. So I enjoyed it enough to take the offer up of another year of a contract with Grenoble. And obviously being promoted to the top 14 was a very big deal for the club. And it would have been always been an ambition of mine to play in the top 14 at some point. And I was very lucky that I got the chance to do it. But I think, practically speaking, I had probably decided around the beginning of the following season that it was going to be my last season. And I just thought that I'd probably gotten all I wanted to out of rugby at that point. I was never going to achieve some of the objectives that I would have had early in my career, like playing for Ireland or, you know, being a mainstay in the starting 15 at Munster. Probably wasn't going to be a mainstay in the starting 15 of any kind of first division team at that point. So while I was enjoying the experience a lot, you have to be pragmatic about these things as well. And I was looking back on, I got to play fully professionally for 6 years, which actually isn't that common nowadays. Like, the average career in Ireland is, I think, 5 years for a professional player. And that's getting slightly and slightly shorter every year. So I was just kind of looking at it going, what more am I going to get out of playing, continuing to play on for another year or 2 years or whatever it may be? My body wasn't in very good shape. I had a heap of injuries over the years that were kind of well documented, I suppose. And that didn't really stop when I moved to France. I was constantly getting kind of little niggles here and there, even really unlucky stuff like concussions or like really minor tears in my hamstring and my calf, that kind of thing. Just stuff that wouldn't be enough to put you on the operating table, or wouldn't be enough to have you sidelined for 3 or 4 months. But still, when you're missing kind of 2, 3, 4 weeks here and there, it's very difficult to get a run of games. And additionally, in France, there's no kind of alternative to playing with the first team at the weekend. So if you're not involved with the first team, you're not playing any rugby. You train on a Friday and that's it, you're off for the weekend. Whereas in Ireland, even though guys aren't necessarily the happiest to do it all the time, for the most part, if you're not involved with the first team at the weekend, you're playing with your club on a Saturday. So at least you're getting that exposure to contact, that exposure to match fitness, but you don't get that in France. So I was finding that when I was coming into play, maybe after 3 or 4 weeks out, like, it was very difficult to come off the bench for 20 or 30 minutes and actually contributing a big way to the remainder of the game. And I've always found players are different, obviously, but I've always found, particularly in my case, that I always needed to kind of have 3 or 4 weeks of decent game time on the bounce in order to kind of get back to a place where I was comfortable in my surroundings, fully comfortable in my surroundings. So I wasn't getting that either. So I wasn't enjoying the rugby side of things as anywhere near as much as I would have early on in my career. So this combination of factors really just made the decision relatively easy in the end.
And is getting out on your own terms an important one as well? Because obviously a lot of players they have that decision made for them. So you'd got back to a point where you actually were able to play and were available to play. Was being able to kind of call time yourself an important decision for you?
I think so. Like most guys, they either don't get offered a contract or they have to retire with injury. And now, ultimately, I ended up dislocating my hip in the last game of last season anyway. So I don't think I'd be able to play rugby again, even if I wanted to, because it's not in the best shape at the moment, unfortunately. So it was ultimately taken out of my hands, but I was able to make the decision beforehand. And I don't know, there are certainly times when, or even in the lead up to the very end of last season, there were times kind of a few weeks out where I was, you know, I might have had a really good week of training, or, you know, the weather was good in France, and you're starting to scratch your head and wonder, is this the best call? Am I being crazy here to turn my back on this? I mean, is anything going to replicate this or come close to replicating this that I'm going to do for the rest of my life? So calling time on it in the way that I did, when everything was in my control and I had the option to do whatever I want, while I would say like probably 90% of that is good, there's still that small element of it that makes you kick yourself every now and again and think, oh God, you should have stayed on for another year.
So with that dislocated hip, is that all rugby gone, full stop? There's not going to be any All-Ireland League comeback with Shannon or anyone down the line, or even in a few years when the mid-30s hit, talking out a bit of junior rugby, something like that now?
I wouldn't rule it out entirely. Like the plan was never to come back and play AIL this season anyway. The plan was always to take a year out. And I went away for a few months traveling with my fiance just before Christmas. So I only got back at Christmas anyway. So the plan was never to get back straight into it. But I'm sure eventually I'll get the hip back to a point where I could play if I wanted to. But the time commitment for AIL is quite severe now these days. I mean, guys are essentially training 3-4 evenings a week and then playing a game at the weekend. So I'm quite happy at the moment just to have my weekends free and not have to worry about not eating crap or having a few glasses of wine on a Saturday night and having the fear of getting up and going into training on a Monday. So it's not in the immediate plans at all. I've been going to watch Shannon since I came back, and you would miss it all right. Shannon, we're on a very good run of results kind of from when the second half of the AIL started in January, and you would miss it a bit all right when you can hear the oil being sung in the dressing room and you're after getting a good win and everyone's getting the smacks in the back and everyone's going for a feed of points afterwards. Like, you do of course miss those elements of it, but that's just life, unfortunately. You can't have it every which way, and I'm pretty happy with the decision that we've made so far anyway.
And I suppose injury sort of defined your career, because you got the breakthrough at Munster initially because there were a lot of injuries at hooker. You were, what, 22, 23 at the time. And I think it was like injuries to Mike Sherry, Damien Varley, and you'd kind of been plugging away with the Munster A's and things like B&I Cup and stuff like that. And all of a sudden you're thrown in. And as you mentioned, when you made the breakthrough, it came through quite quickly. You got a huge run of games altogether.
Yeah, it's funny. It's, you look back on things totally differently when you've been out of the game for a while. So, like, while I was still playing or when I was in France, obviously you do tend to dwell on these things every now and again. It's just human nature that you kind of look back and go, oh, Jesus, if this hadn't happened, or if I'd had a bit more luck here, maybe things would have worked out differently. But yeah, like, I had pretty much kind of 13, 14 really good months at Munster, and it started with good fortune for me and bad fortune for someone else, and then it ultimately ended with bad fortune for me and good fortune for someone else. So Sherry did his knee, he did his ACL, so he was always going to be looking at a lengthy layoff at that point. And like at the previous weekend before I made my debut, very luckily, in a European Cup game in Thomond Park, which very few guys get to do. So that was really special in itself. But I was playing against, I think, Belfast Harlequins in Thomond Park the week before. And I mean, it was a Division 1B game, like a mid-table clash. And it was probably not as far away from a full house in Thomond Park as you could get, but pretty far away at the same time. So Sherry went for his knee operation, and then as has been well documented, he decided to get a shoulder done then when he was out, and that just ended up being really problematic for him. So he ended up missing all of the following season as well. And at the same time, Varl blew the plantar fascia in the sole of his foot. It was due to be my second appearance or my third appearance for Munster, I think. We were playing away in Ravenhill, and he basically, as they say, he just got snipered basically, and was down, and he managed to get through most of the rest of the season, but his body couldn't hack playing the following season, so I just ended up having a clear run at it that year. But ultimately, it was only like one calendar year, really. I got a moderately bad injury myself in, say, around Six Nations time of that following season, and I missed 6 weeks. And after that, like, I never got back to the kind of position in the Munster setup that I would have been previously. So, as I was saying, I was thinking back on it just in the lead up to chatting to you here, Neil, and kind of going, it was really a bit of a flash in the pan when you think about it. I mean, it was just one really good year. There was a little bit before, there was a lot after, and obviously I got to go and play in France, but in terms of me kind of really playing at the level that I think I was capable of and delivering as much as I could for whatever team I was playing for, I think that period only lasted about 14 months. So I was lucky in the sense that I was able to stay at Munster for another couple of years after that. But it just goes to show, like, it's you're only one bad collision away from all of it falling asunder, and kind of like any kind of objectives you potentially flagged for 2-3 years down the line, they suddenly become obsolete, and you're fighting just to get in a matchday squad, let alone kind of have a starting jersey in a European Cup game or pushing up to Ireland camps or anything like that.
Was rugby always the dream? What was your kind of underage curve like, going schools, under 20s, academy, etc.?
The curve was good in that I never really believed that I was good enough to play representative rugby, but I always did. If you get me, I was always surprised when I got selected for Munster squads, but nonetheless, I always got selected. And I remember, like, I took rugby very serious in school. I was captain of the team in Glenstall, and like, when you're in a boarding school environment like that, there's little else to occupy your time, really. So you do really get immersed in it. But kind of when Senior Cup finished in sixth year, I didn't really harbour any ambitions of playing professionally, to be honest. I assumed that I wasn't going to get picked for the 20s that summer, and on my CAO application, I'd put down Trinity College in Dublin as my first choice, and that was the plan. I wasn't going to play rugby at all. I was a meathead for most of my kind of late teens and early 20s, but I just had this obsession with bodybuilding kind of coming out of school, so the plan was just to go and maybe get into competitive bodybuilding or something like that, which thankfully never happened, because that would have been an awful call. But I got the points for that course in Trinity, and then ultimately got selected for the Munster 20s, but went up to Trinity and just decided, look, you kind of have to make a decision here. Are you going to pursue your education, or are you going to kind of roll the dice and hope you get into a sub-academy in Munster? Because there was no indication that they were looking at me as potentially progressing to the senior team at that point. I probably would have had an unfairly low opinion of my ability coming out of school. So I went up to Dublin. I played a bit with Lansdowne, got a bad injury, but so I didn't play much with them, and then just realized that I'd made the wrong call. So George Murray, who's the current video analyst at Munster, he was coaching the Shannon 20s at the time, and he was basically able to organise a transfer for me around Christmas time. So I was able to come back down and play with the Shannon 20s for the rest of the year. And that was my step into the Munster setup at that point. Like, I initially just went in on a 3-week trial, but really didn't have terribly high hopes of it all working out. It was just something that I felt that I needed to to give, something that I felt I needed to have a crack at, basically. And if it didn't work out, it wasn't going to work out, but thankfully it did. So it wasn't like what I did come through the underage system in a similar enough fashion to many other lads. Like, rugby didn't really become a clear priority for me in terms of making a career out of it until I had gone and stepped away from it completely and been a student for a few months. And just kind of wasted a bit of time.
At what point then, once you were kind of in the door with Munster, after George had kind of helped bring you back down to Limerick, at what point did you kind of feel like you were onto something here, that you could potentially be making a breakthrough within a year or so with Munster, in terms of, like, you know, you were there? Was it sub academy or academy you were in?
It was sub academy. So I spent a year and a half in the sub academy, and then 2 years in the academy. But again, like, I think I probably always suffered with a lack of confidence in my own ability as a player, and that probably carried on right the way up to when I was playing like full time senior professional rugby, even though it became less of an issue. So, to be honest, I was always hopeful that I'd make the step to the next, or I'd progress to the next step on the ladder, but it was never something that I was completely confident in my ability to do. So, as I said, at the end of that year and a half period in the sub academy, I was kind of going, "Jesus, I don't know what way this is going to go. Are they going to keep me on?" There were a few other hookers in and around my age there at that stage. So thankfully got the foot in the door then. And at the end of that 2 year period, I was very much like, "I don't know if they're going to give me the nod for a development contract." And I think at the end of that second year, there was a B&I Cup quarterfinal, and basically Ian Costello kind of pulled me and Niall Scandal aside at the end of training. So Sean Henry was going to start, who was kind of the first choice for the B&I team at the time. And Ian Costello basically said, "I haven't made up my mind yet of which one of you I'm going to pick." And Niall is 2 years younger than me still, obviously. So like, if I kind of said to myself at that point, if Niall gets picked ahead of me here, I'd probably just leave it off. To be honest, it'll kind of be evidence enough that I'm not in their plans, really. But thankfully, I got the nod for that, and I kind of held that position in the squad going into my first year as a full time pro. But then, even at that, like, you never really know whether you're good enough until you give some, or until you get to experience something. So, like, obviously, I was in a mad panic when I got picked for that European Cup game against Perpignan when Sherry got injured, because it was such a kind of dramatic thrust into a big occasion. But thankfully, it all worked out, and I think probably after my fifth or sixth performance, I was kind of feeling pretty comfortable at that level. But it was only after that fifth or sixth game, and I was lucky enough to get two or three starts in that period of time, and it was only after getting those minutes under my belt and realizing that I could hold my own and could actually perform very well, that I became certain to a degree that I was good enough to play at that level and could be a really important part of a squad at that level.
That Perpignan game, was that the Thomond Park game in that pool stage, or was it the one in France with JJ Hanrahan's last minute try?
It was the one in Thomond Park. I didn't
far less follow far me. Less dramatic, far less dramatic.
Yeah, exactly. I think we were probably 40 points up at that point by the time I got in the pitch. I think I got 8 minutes or something like that. But yeah, I don't mind. It was 8 minutes more than I'd ever had before, and it was in front of a full house. But no, I didn't play. I didn't play at all the following week. But I mean, like, I wouldn't have brought a youngster off the bench that hadn't played before myself, so I wasn't surprised by that. But that was a really special thing just to be a part of, even though I didn't get in the field at all. It was just an incredible occasion, and it's kind of only when you have a few years of rugby under your belt, or professional rugby under your belt, that you realise just how rare an occasion something like that was. I mean, a last minute try in a must win game away from home in this cauldron, I mean, it doesn't happen too often. So it's definitely something that stands out for me, despite the fact that I didn't actually play at all.
And on the one you did play then in Thomond Park, as you said, it was, you know, comfortably winning. You probably got 8 or 10 minutes, I imagine, regardless of how much game time you actually had for for a week or so, you're walking on air?
Yeah, like, it's kind of, like, for me, it was more relief. Like, I remember being petrified, like being crippled with nerves in the lead up to that, because I was living on my own at the time. So there was no one there to reassure me, really. I was just kind of being left alone with my own thoughts. And I remember on the Tuesday, so it would have been when we were still split between Limerick and Cork, and on the Tuesday session, which is when we would have done the bulk of the line-out work, I think between us, me and Varls, we barely hit a line-out for the entire 30 minutes or whatever that we were doing. So, and O'Connell was pretty riled up that week, as he tended to be in European Cup week. So he was letting us know basically that we weren't performing up to standard. So I was going home from that just being terrified, you know. So I got on to Gerry Flannery, and he was over in Arsenal at the time, and he gave me a call, and that was great. Yeah, that kind of put me at ease a bit, and kind of from Thursday on in, it was all right. But yeah, in the aftermath, like I think I had one line out. I hit that, and that was my first involvement when I came on. And it was just like that's the kind of standout feeling, is just that relief of having that not made a mess of it in front of 25,000 people or whatever it is.
When you are making the breakthrough at Munster and stuff like that, what was the kind of team atmosphere like at the time for young players coming through? Were there, like you mentioned, Paul O'Connell there? Was he the sort of person who would put the arm around the shoulder and give you the words of encouragement, or was there just a very clear message of you're here and you're expected to be at a level? You know, this is Munster, two-time Heineken Cup champions. You know, when you're here and playing with us, you're expected to be at the level.
No, I think like a guy like Paulie, I think what separates him and why I think I think if he wants to be, he'll be a world-class coach for as long as he wants, is because he always managed to get the balance right, I think, between those different things that you just talked about. Like he has excellent people skills, and probably in a place like Munster, and when a guy like that is there, that rubs off on people around him, and that just becomes the kind of default approach of people, because you're trying to mirror the leaders in the squad, basically, and you learn that that's the way to communicate with people, and that's the way to go about your business. And probably a bit, what would you say, like it was almost unrealistic, the expectations that I set for other people then, because when I left, I realized that like that kind of an approach isn't standard at all in rugby across the board. Like we were actually very lucky with the group of players that we had, and particularly a guy like him who was able to marshal things so well. But there was never any kind of excessive harshness on young lads, but at the same time, like you say, there was a kick up the arse when you needed it, and I think he got that right, and not just him, but all the senior players and a lot of the younger guys as well who would have played quite a bit of rugby at that stage. It was just part of the culture there that like you needed to be tough and you needed to take criticism on the chin, but at the same time, you needed to understand that if a guy is low on confidence, you berating him isn't going to do him any good, and it's not going to do the team any good either. So like that's a big problem in France, not just in Grenoble, like, but across the board. Like there's a lot of blaming going on. There's a lot of finger pointing going on. That's that's coaches, players, like everything. And it's totally at odds with what we'd be used to. Not just in Munster now, but I would assume in all the other provinces as well. So I was very lucky to be a young guy in that environment where like it was just parts. It was something that didn't need to be said. Like guys just always learn from the people that were older than them. And they did what they did, and the younger guys learned from them subsequently. So it was a very good environment. Like it was a right combination of you've been expected to work hard and be on top of your stuff and not let the side down, but at the same time, you kind of being encouraged to come out of your shell and believe in your own ability.
Yeah, I suppose it kind of shows that the, you know, culture is a word that's used a lot in sports and dressing rooms and stuff. It's not really just a buzzword, really, is it? It does play a big part for a younger player and coming through.
Yeah, like culture can be a buzzword, and a lot of the time it's used as a buzzword. Like, I mean, there's rugby is full of buzzwords, and like I'm sure as a journalist, you're as familiar with that as anyone else. Like, but it's full of cliches and it's full of buzzwords, and like something like culture could be totally meaningless in one place if it's just something that's said, but people don't buy
it. If you have it, it's different, I suppose, is it?
Exactly, yeah. Like people talk about Munster's culture a lot, and when you're there, you probably don't understand it. Like I said, we were blessed just to have the environment that we had and the players we had around us and the coaches that we had directing us. But like, it's not something you can put your finger on when you're in that environment. It's just normality. Like, I mean, if you come through the Munster Academy, like you hear people talk about the Munster culture, but you can't really put a finger on it because you don't have anything to compare it to. It's only really when you move abroad that you can realize, oh Jesus, like that's what they meant by that. That's what's lacking here, or that's what we could do with a bit more of here. And like from what I gather, like Leinster, predictably enough, like it's just it's similar enough, and like they're the best in the business at the moment, and it's because of the culture there. But again, I would imagine a lot of the young lads there, they don't have any concept of how lucky they are to be in a place with that kind of culture, because it's all that they know, and that's great because it just means that the standards that guys set for themselves and have others set for them when they're coming out of an academy side and into a senior side, and they're fighting just to get a minute of game time in teams like that. Those standards are so high in comparison to elsewhere, and that's just great for Irish rugby.
So the first couple of years after you made your debut, things were going quite well. You weren't picking up injuries, you were playing a lot, and you were impressing as well, scoring a good few tries along the way as well. What were the aspirations at the time? In your head, was Ireland on the horizon? I have a notion in my head you were involved in one of the kind of mini camps throughout the year. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, I was up in one camp. It would have been Christmas 2014. So we had, like, I think it was like the 22nd or the 23rd, probably. It was just like a 24-hour camp. So I was lucky because the lad said that it was the best form that Joe Schmidt had ever been in at a camp. So I wasn't there to bear the brunt of any of his ire as a newcomer. So it was all pretty laid back. So it wasn't a proper camp. But that was my only exposure to that. But yeah, like, I don't know. Again, I'd always be quite self-deprecating in a way. And I don't know where that comes from. I'm sure there's some psychoanalysis that could be done on me that would get to the bottom of it. That's beyond the scope of this interview, unless you have any suggestions, Neil. But
No.
But yeah, like, obviously you hear people talking about it, and you kind of want to ignore it, but you can't ignore it. But like, it's a very difficult kind of balancing act in that, like, you need to have goals. So, and there's nothing wrong with having goals. So like, if your goal is, if you're playing for Munster, your goal is to play for Ireland, then, or to become a mainstay in the Irish side, then that's perfectly reasonable. And every sports psychologist in the world would encourage you to have that kind of goal. But you also need to be grounded and realize that just because you're on the step below that, you just continuing to do what you're doing at the same pace that you're doing it, or with the same intensity that you're doing it, isn't necessarily going to result in you moving forward or kind of moving into that sphere of achieving that goal. So for me, like, I didn't get picked for those autumn internationals. Richard Strauss got picked, and that, like, look, that was understandable. He had played for it and plenty of times before. I had kind of just broken onto the scene really, and that was my first run of starts. And then I got picked for that camp before Christmas, and I was playing really good rugby in and around that. But to be honest, like, I think maybe I might have played by default at some point around that time, because just by virtue of the fact that I would have been next in line. So say if one of those three hookers that had been picked for the autumn internationals had been injured, then I probably would have gotten a cap against Georgia, which was the kind of tier two fixture in that period of time. So, and like, over the kind of between then and the end of that season, there were probably in the Six Nations, maybe it might not have happened, but I don't think I was ever going to fit into, the type of player, or fit in to be the type of player that Joe Schmidt wanted.
And why was that? What type of player do you think he was looking for compared to what you were?
I think he was probably someone more abrasive. Ireland kind of had this period where all the hookers playing for the provinces were quite small in comparison to bigger country or to other countries, say. So you had like Sean Cronin and me were in around the same weight. I was probably a little bit heavier, but like when you're a freakishly good ball carrier and attacker and you're a magician with the ball in hand, then that doesn't become relevant. Whereas I didn't have that element to my game, really. Rory Best wasn't a big man, but he was strong. He had that kind of firm strength and those miles on the clock and just that kind of manly strength that just gets cultivated by years and years of professional rugby. And I was kind of a young guy. I wasn't soft or didn't lack physicality, but I wasn't a physically imposing guy by any means. So like my main strengths when I was playing would have been my line out throwing, my work rate, and probably my handling. So the reason that I was able to kind of perform so well when Rob Penny was there was because I was getting my hands on the ball so much. The following year, that was kind of less of a thing with Axel's game plan. He played more directly, and Joe Schmitz was quite similar. So like he didn't want a guy who when he got the ball, like loved throwing a tip onto someone running off his shoulder or throwing a spin pass if he could, which is kind of what I like to do. So I didn't fit into that mold, so I never really expected that I would, to be honest. It would have been nice, but different coaches just prefer different traits in certain players, and it was the same when Razzie came to Munster. Like I didn't fit into the type of game that he wanted to play, and that was unfortunate for me, but that's just reality.
Mm-hmm. And by the time Razzie would have come in then, so we're talking summer of 2016, you'd been out, you'd pretty much missed the bulk of that season. Was it the first couple of rounds of the Champions Cup, kind of October 2015 or November probably 2015, when you got the first of those really bad injuries, the pectoral tear? And I'm right in saying that kept you out pretty much until for the rest of that season.
That's right, yeah. So I was out, I got really like, and actually... It's quite irritating in hindsight, because so basically I was out for about 5 months with that, but I came back to being fit in around late March, early April, I'd say. I would have gotten the all clear to play, but I was able to play one A game, just a friendly against Ulster. So I played 50 minutes then, but I didn't break back into the first team for the rest of that season. Which was understandable, because the two lads were performing relatively well. Niall Scannell had broken onto the scene, and they were doing the job, so they didn't want to disrupt things, even though I would have liked them to. But so basically there's a rule in the AIL which states that I think it's in order to play in the last four games of the ordinary league, you have to have played four games before that period or five games before that period. So basically I was looking at it and going, okay, unlikely that I'm going to break back into the first team at this point, but at least I can just get myself fit. I can get some minutes under my belt, and I can just, you know, look forward to a bit of a break in the summer and then attack preseason full on. So what happened was, because I don't think I'd played any games for Shannon before that, in that season, there was like, Shannon were in danger of going down, and one of the other teams that was in danger of going down, basically objected to me being released to come back and play. So I played my next game of competitive rugby, or sorry, next game of rugby in general, in like August of 2016. So I had gone from, say, November 2015 to August 2016 with only playing 50 minutes of rugby in a friendly. So I didn't really appreciate it at the time, but it took me quite a while to work up to being physically ready again. And unfortunately then, six games into the following season, I did my knee, and that was the end of it really for me in Munster. So, people would often ask me, do you get bitter at anything in particular? Like when you look back, and I genuinely don't, because you can't control anything in sport at the end of the day. That's outside of your own body. But one thing that definitely contributed to me, I think, not being able to get back to the level that I was at, was not being able to play any rugby at the end of that season. I think that would have been really good for me psychologically. And unfortunately, I just didn't get the chance to kind of go in and blow off the cobweb. So obviously, as you said, Raji and Jacques came in, and I was just kind of back into playing first team professional rugby at that point, and everyone's out to impress and everything else. And there was just a period of time that I needed, I think, to ease myself back into it that I didn't get by not being able to play at the end of that season.
Mm-hmm. It was incredible. Like, I was looking back through the press releases, getting ready to chat to you today, in the email inbox, and I'm looking, February 2016, you signed a 2-year extension with Munster. At that point, you played, I think they'd said, you played 40 games over the previous few seasons with Munster to that point. Looking back at it then, so from February 2016, when you signed that 2-year deal, ultimately you get 6 more games playing with Munster, and all of them coming in the, I suppose, the start of the following season. And unfortunately, that's when the injuries really came for you.
That's right, yeah. That was a good call, wasn't it? Signing that deal. But the thing was, I had the option of going to France at that point. In terms of regrets, like, that's the standout regret. Now, obviously, look,
where in France was the option?
It was Pau. So it was like there was an offer kind of coming to the table from Pau. And
is that when was that when Simon Mannix was there? There was a little Munster cohort in Pau at that time, wasn't there?
That's right, yeah. So Paddy would have been over there, and Sean Dougal would have been over there.
Paddy Butler, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then there would have been like Paddy O'Sullivan, who was still there, is coaching the academy there. He was one of the video analysts at Munster, and Elliot as well, who was one of the video analysts at Munster. He was over there too. So there was a big Munster contingent, yeah. And I bottled the decision. I kind of knew, objectively speaking, that it would have been a good time to leave because, like Scan had come onto the scene and was performing really well, and I knew that he was a very different player to me. And like, he's a big lad, and it's kind of scrummaging, kind of hard yard carries is what he's good at. And I could kind of see the writing on the wall a little bit, but convince myself that it wasn't really the case. And yeah, like I said, I basically bottled it because it was an easier thing to do to stay in my comfort zone, I think, and stick to what I knew. And I've lost a lot of sleep, or not anymore, but I lost a lot of sleep over that decision kind of in the subsequent 12 months when it became clear that things weren't going to work out with me at Munster, or work out for me at Munster. So yeah, like, that's the thing, is like, from November 2015 to when I left in January 2018, you know, I only played 6 games of rugby, and why would you want to hang around when you're surplus to requirements like that, you know? Munster was a great place, obviously, of fantastic memories and fantastic friends that I'll be very close to for the rest of my life from my time there. But I mean, ultimately, I'd often say if you kind of take it from your point of view, Neil, like, as in, if you're the main anchor on off the ball every evening, and then I don't know, like,
I'm in the sub academy at the moment, Duncan. Sub academy at the moment.
But yeah, but you imagine you keep trucking, and you work your way up. But say, for example, if you're the main anchor and off the ball, and you get injured or whatever, and you come back and you're basically told to go and make the tea for the next kind of year, and then at the end of that year they say, no, we think, like, you know, we really like you, we love having you around, we'd love you to stay, and you kind of go, well, like I know I can do a bit better than this, and that there's more to life than this. So that's kind of the position I found myself in. It was like Munster wanted me to stay. And they were kind of almost a bit surprised when I told them that I was going to finish up. And a lot of people would be, because, like, why would you choose not to play professional rugby when you could play professional rugby? And that's kind of an understandable reaction to get from people. But ultimately, like, if you know what you were able to do before, and you're light years away from being back there again, then what's the point in hanging around, really?
Mm-hmm. obviously I want to speak about one man in particular, because your final game for Munster was the Glasgow Warriors game the week after Anthony Foley had passed. I imagine over the years previous, you would have got fairly close to Anthony Foley. Was he involved with you kind of coming through the underage systems when he would have been involved with the Munster Academy and things like that? And obviously being a Shannon club man as well, I imagine there was some extra little bit of kinship there.
Yeah, there was. Like, I had a very close relationship with them. I started working with them at 20s. Like, I remember going into kind of to meet him in UL when I was in sixth year, kind of just to chat about things leading into the 20s campaign that summer. But yeah, like I worked with him 20s. I worked with him for the A's then for a year anyway before he progressed to the senior side. And then like he was the forwards coach and ultimately head coach. And like, I mean, like if you look at what happens now, not just in Munster but elsewhere, say like if you had two international hookers like Mike Sherry and Damien Varley and both of them got injured, like realistically you'd look to bring someone else in, because even if you liked the young guy and you rated him, like you'd probably be playing with fire a little bit to just kind of dump the kind of responsibility on him potentially. And I think you can see that with the kind of level of frequency that medical jokers come into clubs now. Whereas I firmly believe that just like Axel being there and basically kind of fighting my corner and speaking on my behalf was a big factor in me getting the extended run of opportunity that I did. So, yeah, look, he was a massive influence. He was a massive influence on me. I'll actually show you. Got like, so I don't know if that's clear, but yeah, that's the front page of the Examiner from the Tribune afterwards. Like, so that's on the wall in my living room. So he's never far from my thoughts, given that he's hanging on the wall of my living room. But he was a huge influence on me and countless numbers of other people, not just in Munster, but all over kind of all over club rugby in Limerick, and obviously, as you say, particularly Shannon. So yeah, like it was an interesting time in that like things had just really started to come right, and like we were obviously, like everyone was kind of energized by the new voices coming in, and Razzy and Axel were bouncing so well off each other, and there was just this massive buzz and like this massive anticipation kind of the season ahead. So yeah, for him to not be around to reap the benefits of kind of so many young lads that he would have nurtured over the years, kind of stepping up and performing and ultimately like, you know, becoming a really, really powerful force in European rugby for the remainder of that season and the next season. It's a real shame, because I think he got a lot of criticism during his time as head coach, but like you really saw it start to pay dividends then the following year. And I certainly hope Olive and the boys are doing well at the moment. But yeah, I mean, like it's like in Shannon, people talk about him all the time, and he'd often come up in conversation with the lads as well. So he's sorely missed, as you can imagine.
And finally then as well, I imagine it was probably very special, even though it was your last Munster game, to be able to be involved in that match against Glasgow.
It was terrific. Like I think I only played 5 minutes or something, because I came on and then I did my knee and I came back off, which encapsulated my career with Munster kind of well enough in itself. But it was an incredible occasion. I don't think I will ever, for as long as I live, ever kind of have an experience like that, where there's just such a range of emotions like bouncing around within a group of people like that. I mean, you guys in tears coming off the bus, like, you know, even myself, like you kind of be grand, you'd be doing a drill in the warm up, and then you'd be borderline crying, kind of running to the next drill, because you could just feel that emotion in the air. It was really tangible, and like it was having a massive impact on everyone that was involved, not just people on the pitch, but in the stand as well. So yeah, an unforgettable experience, and it was a great send off for him, and obviously a fantastic victory in itself. So yeah, that was my last game for Munster. So while it didn't end on the best note for me personally, it was certainly a very special occasion to bow out on.
Yeah, I imagine so. Well, Duncan, we're running out of time here. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on with us here on Off the Ball. Thanks a million for taking the time to speak to us, and all the best with the studies and the career ahead as well.
You're very welcome, Neil. Thanks for having me. All the best.
That's former Munster and Grenoble hooker Duncan Casey. We'll have another interview coming your way with me next Sunday, and there'll be more rugby coverage coming your way on Off the Ball across the week. Monday night rugby and Wednesday night rugby in the usual places, and you can listen back to all of those on the OTB Podcast Network as well.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.